This is the Best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, brought to you by Coach Pete at Capital Financial Advisory Group. Visit us at capitalfinancialusa.com.
All right, let's get to it, sir. What's different about NC State's half-court defense now than a month ago?
I think there's a lot of things, but if you had to highlight the big one, they're doing a better job taking away the rim. I think the pick-and-roll defense has held up, and they throw different looks at you. With Diarra and Middlebrooks, they can switch a lot, and those guys were very active switching against Duke. When it's DJ Burns, he's in the drop coverage. He's sitting back in the paint, that's been the case for two seasons with him now in Raleigh. But I just think he's done a better job being like a little bit more disciplined about keeping 2 feet in the paint, not lunging out at the ball handler, and just making sure he's in the way and that there's no dive pass to the roller going down the lane. And then again, Middlebrooks can switch, but you'll see him hedge. You'll see him be up at the level. Middlebrooks can kind of do everything defensively for you at the five spot. And he's so mobile. You're gonna guard things pretty aggressively or switch with him. And then it doesn't hurt that you have to close possessions down, and State has one of the best rebounders in the country with Mo Diarra, right? So they do a pretty good job forcing turnovers. With their switch, they can take away some of your automatic off-ball reads that make you play deeper into the shot clock. They're doing a better job controlling the paint, and then they've got an elite defensive rebounder, Mo Diarra, who's flying around making plays, not just rebounding, like his blocks and individual defense have been incredible too. But I think if I had to highlight it, it would just be that they're just doing a better job guarding ball screens and taking away the paint.
Brian Geisinger is joining us here on the Adam Gold Show. Have they done anything different to pressure the perimeter more, or are they just, is it basically all tied to pick and roll?
I mean, I think those things work together. I do think State's, perimeter defenders, they have good ones. Mm-hmm. Taylor and Morsell are plus, ACC perimeter defenders.
Right.
DJ Horn's a little bit smaller, but he's definitely not bad. He'll guard the ball, and O'Connell is obviously solid and has had some big defensive performances for them in the postseason in D.C. and when they've been for the ACC tournament and when they played Oakland. So I think there's something to be said about not having a weak spot defensively.
Right.
If everyone's a C+, if not better defender, that's tough. There's no obvious point to go at. And again, Burns is probably a bit of a weak spot, but they can hide him a little bit. Mm-hmm. Having Diarra or Middlebrooks out there can protect him some. And then when they play those lineups where it's, three of the guards, and maybe you got Taylor and Morsell out there as two of them, and then you've got Middlebrooks and Diarra, again, offensively, you're going to look different because you don't have the Burns post-up action to work off of. But defensively, they're super versatile. They're rangy. So I do think Morsell has really stepped up and taken on a challenge. It feels like he's defending the last 3 weeks like he did last season, where it was sort of seemed obvious that he was one of the better, more stout guard defenders in the league.
Brian Geisinger is joining us here on the Adam Gold Show. Let me just kind of finish State before I get to Duke. Can any of the things that they have been doing, does it translate to dealing with Purdue and Zach Edey? Because they just look like they run a different type of offense than Duke was trying to run. Yeah. So how does what they were doing translate here? How would you attack Zach Edey?
Yeah, it's going to be a lot to deal with. And when Edey's on the court, they've been incredible this season. If you can somehow get him in foul trouble and get him off the court, they're very vulnerable because this is Purdue's offense. That's very versatile. They do a lot of cool motion concepts. They've got some pick and roll, but everything they do is tailored around Edey, rolling to the rim and especially posting up. And when he rolls to the rim, often he's looking to get some paint position and seal down there. He's hard to double team because his post-ups don't look like the DJ Burns, the 20 feet out back down. These are much more UNC high-low style, quick hitters. And so it's just tough it's tough to get two guys on him because he's catching it with deep post position and he's gigantic. So he's just right at the rim. So I think it's tough because, like, he's also, like, he's just going to get to his spots at times, and there's just nothing you can do about it, as opposed to hopefully just, like, avoid some bad fouls, because they do a really good job bending the defense a little bit, then rotating, reversing the ball, and then having, you know, Edie gets the seal on a duck in or on high low, and he goes pretty quick. Like, he's, despite his size, like, he's, like, fairly nimble for someone that's 7'4", 300 pounds, which is, like, it's a pretty sizable qualifier on
right.
that point, but
yeah.
the point is true. So, like, he's tough. I just think they've got to do a good job, like, making sure that the, like, where they're, like, trying to, that he's not able to do your work early and try to make sure he doesn't get deep post touches every single time down the court, because they can just high-low you to death.
Yep.
The Purdue and Edie and Burns, those are the only two players in the country that recorded over 300 post-up possessions this season. So it's like, it is a real, like, old-school matchup. But
yeah.
But Zach Edie, almost 500 post-up possessions. Like, this team, everything they do, like, every play that they run, it's not, like, designed to, like, get the ball to Edie. Like, it has some, like, last-second extension on it. You know what I mean? Where, like, all of a sudden, like, the ball's reversed one more time, then he backs in, or there's
right.
one more cross screen, and then you look for him. Just, like, he can always be, like, this, like, tack on, even when he's not the focal point of the play. So just, like, being aware of him at all times, trying to make that the pickup point difficult. And, like, you know, I don't think State's a team that double teams the post a lot, and Purdue can make you pay because they space it. You know, they play with pace and space around his post-ups, and they've got three or four really good shooters out there. So it's tough. It's a lot. But, hell, man, I've counted out State's defense too many times.
Right.
This, you know, this run to do it again. But this is a totally different animal. And just given Edie's foul-drawing prowess, 9.9 fouls drawn per 40 minutes, it's insane. He's fouling out two guys per game, basically.
Right.
It's a load to deal with.
Yeah. You know, they've got three guys who could theoretically guard the post. But it might take all three. All right, let's get to Duke. What went wrong?
Adam Gold in studio with my man, Coach Pete DeRuta, Capital Financial Advisory Group. I was on your website, and I love the term financial termites, because there are always things eating at your money that you can't see.
So you don't want financial termites. Termites in the financial world are risk, fees, unnecessary commissions. All the bad things that we see and we hear about on TV are happening many times inside your portfolio you don't see. So you need a financial exterminator. Well, for the next 10 of you who call, we'll put together for you your very own total retirement plan at no cost.
Call 888-843-0013 or text Adam to 600-700.
Adam Gold is a paid spokesman. Investment advisory services offered by Capital Financial Advisory Group, a North Carolina registered investment advisor.
I mean, kind of a lot of stuff. It was sort of like worst case scenario type game for them, with the exception of McCain just playing super duper well. And actually, while I have a second on McCain, anyone who's going at this guy for whatever strange non-basketball reason, you people are pathetic. This guy is all about winning.
People are going at him?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sometimes social media can be like a little bit of a toxic place.
Yeah,
you've seen this
sometimes.
With McCain. That guy's all about winning. If you wouldn't want this guy in your team, you're a moron and you know nothing about
right.
basketball. He was awesome in this game.
I agree.
There was just not enough help elsewhere. I thought, this has been a reoccurring thing all season. I've tried to, like, not buy into the, oh, Kyle Filipowski, you can just take him mentally out of the games because he's still so good. But when they needed it most in this game with the season on the line, like, I thought Middlebrooks got in his head. He drew a couple of fouls, and all of a sudden, Kyle Filipowski, who's this amazing, you know, amazing two-way player, matchup problem,
yep.
good defender, anchors Duke's defense. All of a sudden he's playing, you know, flip ball, you know, and
mm-hmm.
he's not even like focused on the game because he's mad at the refs. He's mad at Middlebrooks. and then I just thought, like, they couldn't quite figure out for the second time this season, like, what they wanted to do with Burns. They go to single coverage. He scores every time, you know, or
right.
he runs some cutters and get a bucket off that. They try to double team late, and then he picks out another cutter. So, like, I just think they never quite solved the Burns conundrum. Flip was not in his game in the second half.
Right.
And then to have a guy like Tyrese Proctor, who's a really good player, I mean, to have him miss every shot and score 0 points
while
playing 30 minutes in the Elite Eight game is that's pretty tough.
Yeah, that and I really thought Jeremy Roach after the second half against Houston, I thought we would have gotten vintage Jeremy Roach. And it looked like we were going to get good Jeremy Roach, but ultimately we didn't. Like, he had a fairly good start to the game, and then it kind of went away. And they went way too many stretches without Jared McCain really, you know, being a major factor in the offense. They went way too long a period of time without McCain driving. Too many empty spots. And I did think that just going back to the Carolina game, the second Carolina game, when John after the game talked about all these things that we do or that we're not doing well are in our control. And I pushed back on that simply because, you know, sometimes the other team, they're trying to do the same things you are, and they're just better suited. I wonder if there was enough. And guys, Flip kind of talked about, you know, in terms of his own inability at times to maintain focus and to get, you know, to. And he clearly wasn't there. They had to rely too much on Ryan Young against Houston to kind of get them settled in the game. And that's great and all that, but you shouldn't have to rely on Ryan Young to do that. There was some internal things missing from that team this year that I just don't think you can really overcome when it really gets down to it. So where do they go from here?
Yeah, and I should tack on. I mean, no Caleb Foster too. We talked about this goal, but I think they missed his shooting. I think they missed his drives. You know, he's a guy they could have gone to. But this to me, like, I think if I'm assessing this roster now and going forward, like, obviously there's going to be a ton of turnover. But it's like, who stays? You know, you need to try to lock down as many of the Caleb Foster, John Stewart. You know, I assume Jared McCain's gone, but is there a chance he wants to come back? What's Tyrese Proctor going to do? Is Jeremy Roach going to come back for a fifth year? I think you got to figure like all of that stuff out.
Right.
Because you've got a ton of like incoming talent, but, and you've got, you know, arguably the best draft prospect in the country coming to Durham in a few months, but like, you've got to figure out how you want to like complete the roster. And so it's like, is that going to be done by bringing some guys back, or is that going to be done by like really overhauling things in the portal? No matter what, they're going to have to find stuff in the portal. Like, I think they, looking at this roster, there was a front court rotation that was missing a player or two.
Right.
Know, like a shooter at the four spot or a lob threat at the center spot. I mean, maybe that would have been Christian Reeves if he'd been healthy this year. A 3-and-D type wing, you know, losing Jacob Grandison from last season. And, you know, TJ Power couldn't quite play that role, you know, this year. And so I think it's going to be key to sort of like piece in like how you want to like augment these big time, this one big time talent you've got coming in with Cooper Flagg. So I don't know, it's figuring out who wants to return. And then going from there in terms of like the portal, there's some work to be done, but like Duke has obviously like every resource in the world and a really smart coaching staff. But if I were John Shire, my thought would be, I'm not putting together a roster like this that's got like, you know, holes on it, and it's not happening anymore. And I do think he's going to have to sort of like, I have incredible respect for John Shire. I think he's an amazing coach. One thing though, I do think he's going to have to sort of like sort through lineups a little bit more. His hands were tied to an extent this season, but
right.
You know, not having Stewart or Power developed, you know, maybe that's something that maybe that wasn't possible, but having one more guy that you really, really could have trusted, would have maybe swung one or two more games for you. And that's like the difference between an ACC title and no ACC title and, you know, Final Four or an Elite Eight. Margins are tight.
Yeah, well, obviously. I think, we saw Sean Stewart coming on at the end of the year.
For sure.
I don't know what drives kids to leave or stay. Some kids want to stay to pursue a title, but the reality is they're probably staying because they're not going to go high enough in the draft. So I don't know where Jared McCain fits in the NBA draft. I mean, I've seen enough mock drafts to see his name come up in the mid-20s, right? I haven't seen him any higher than that. Kyle Filipowski's in the mid-teens. So I haven't seen him really any higher than that at this point. And who knows what if the latest performance matters in a negative way, since Kyle kind of mentally went away in a time that his team really needed him. So that can't be a good thing if teams are scouting what they see in games. I mean, who knows what's going to happen? I do know Duke's recruiting class is very front court heavy. There's a lot of bigs and forwards and wings, and not a lot coming in on at guard. So to me, that's they desperately need to either retain some of their backcourt or go out and find some of the at least one more piece in the backcourt. Yeah. I don't know.
Shopify helps you sell at every stage of your business. Like that, let's put it online and see what happens stage.
And the site is live.
That we opened a store and need a fast checkout stage.
Thanks, you're all set.
That count it up and ship it around the globe stage.
This one's going to Thailand.
And that, wait, did we just hit 1 million orders stage? Whatever your stage, businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/listen.
Yeah, I think you could make a case for all of the guards to potentially be. I mean, I don't think all of them will be back, but you could certainly make a case like Proctor. And I don't think a lot of this was his I think some of this wasn't entirely his fault. Like, he's still pretty young for a sophomore, too. But just like his draft stock is in a worse place now than it was 365 days ago. I think Caleb Foster was never a one and done type guy. No. He loves being at Duke. Like, he should come back and be a really good sophomore guard for Duke. Jeremy Roach, I mean, I guess he could have one more year of eligibility. He's an amazing college point guard. Like, and he could probably make more with NIL at Duke than he could playing anywhere else next season. Like, he's not, likely to end up on a full-time NBA roster. And, like, I think McCain is the guy that probably played himself into the middle of the first round, that kind of shooter, the movement, special stuff, man.
Yeah.
And he's all about the right things. But look, he, like, his brother's at Duke. He loved playing at Duke. Like, he makes a ton of money on NIL. Maybe he wants to play with Cooper Flagg. there are reasons. Like, there's a case to be made for all of these guys. So, and it's just sort of tough to, like, from the outside looking in, to just, like, guess what's going to happen. I would assume McCain's played himself into too high of a pick to come back. But we've definitely seen stranger things. And I think, but because this is a little bit of a weaker draft, maybe you think you're more suited there. But, hell, man, if you want to live in Durham for one more year, play college basketball, make seven figures doing it, and play with Cooper Flagg, maybe go to the Final Four, win a title, feel like you got unfinished business, then there's a lot of reasons why you would want to come back, too.
Brian Geisinger, our Mr. Basketball. All right, sir, we're not done with you. I'll talk to you later.
Yeah, you guys be good.
Shopify helps you sell at every stage of your business. Like that, let's put it online and see what happens stage.
And the site is live.
That we opened a store and need a fast checkout stage.
Thanks, you're all set.
That count it up and ship it around the globe stage.
This one's going to Thailand.
And that, wait, did we just hit 1 million orders stage? Whatever your stage, businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/listen.